So let's go to Genesis 33. Let's spend a little time here in the book of Genesis. Some of this I'm going to move through a little quicker, just because I want to get to some stuff later on. But when we come to chapter 33, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, Jacob is traveling back to his homeland and preparing to meet Esau. In chapter 32... you have Jacob sending his sending some of his family and others ahead of him, partly because he's afraid of what Esau might do. And you remember that as he's preparing his people to go, he's reiterating kind of his humility toward Esau, and he calls him, you know, several times, my Lord, and he calls himself Esau's servant. Well, he's not met Esau yet. As you get to the end of chapter 32 is when Jacob wrestles with God, and that's where he dislocates his hip. But yet Jacob holds on for a blessing, and that's where we initially see God change his name from Jacob to Israel. And so that's where we left off. Let's go to verse 1. It says, "And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him." Now, we also have seen this already, where Esau is bringing a big company, and it's made Jacob a little fearful. And so he had sent some gifts ahead to give to Esau. And now he's going to line up his family. Now, the way he does it is he begins with, it says there, so he divided, verse number 1, so he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. And he put the servants with their children in front. So who were the two servants? Yes. So they're going, they're in the forward, right? And then you'll have Leah with her children, and then finally Rachel, and then who's at the very back? Joseph, right? Joseph, and it's kind of an order in the way he appreciates them, right or wrong. It seems to be, at least from Jacob's point of view, he's putting forward the ones he prizes the most there at the back. Now, the text tells us that he himself, verse 3, though, did what? He went on ahead of all of them. He went first. And he goes and he bows himself, verse 3, to the ground 7 times before Esau until his brother came near. And that seems to have been a Near Eastern custom, or a custom of that area, where he would bow to the ground 7 times, showing respect and humility again. Verse 4 tells us that Esau then runs up. Now, this is not the meeting that Jacob obviously is expecting, yet Esau runs up to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. The first thing that came to my mind is the prodigal son, right? Or the father. When the prodigal son comes home, he's expecting to be a servant of his father, yet that's not the welcome he gets. The father runs out and he kisses him, and then of course he puts the rings and the clothes on him. And so you have somewhat similar. Esau is a different, at least in this area, he's changed. You don't see the hatred that you saw when Jacob left. Were you going to say something, Jody?
One part of that is the fact that Esau brought 400 men. Esau's done quite well for himself financially. It's not a situation where he feels defrauded. Mm-hmm. Also reminds me a little bit of what you listened this morning about Joseph, how his brothers came to him out of fear that they were going to be retaliated against. Jacob made that same fear with Esau.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when you get to, we won't spend time on it, but in this class, but in chapter 36, he goes to the lineage of Esau. Now, Esau is not going to be brought up a lot more, but in chapter 36, it gives us real detail about the descendants of Esau, which eventually would become what? What nation?
Edom,
right? Which would be just to the southeast of Israel, of the nation of Israel. Any other things about that section? I'm not going to go into detail about a lot of the rest of it. I'll let you sit down and read it. Not a lot of new information, but just some details about their interaction. Of course, Esau was very surprised to see Jacob with this big family, and he's amazed about that. I do think I wanted to mention one thing. Verse number 8, after asking about the huge company that's coming with Jacob, Esau asked that of Jacob. And then Jacob responds, wait, I'm on the wrong one. Oh, I'm sorry, back up to verse 5. My bad. Verse 5. The end of verse 5, Jacob says, "The children whom God has graciously given to your servant." Right? And so we mentioned this last time. You begin to see the relationship Jacob has with God changing. Before this, he had kind of spoke about God in the abstract. It was the God of Abraham and of Isaac, his father, right? That's kind of how he spoke about God. Well, as time has went on, and you really see this change begin at Peniel, where the wrestling with God, Jacob, God becomes really his God. And we'll see this even more and more as we move forward. And so he speaks of the great blessings God has provided to him. You eventually have Esau accept the gift that Jacob has sent ahead. At first he kind of seems like, I'm okay, you don't have to give me anything. But you know, when you have people over at your house and you want to offer them food or something, they're like, I'm okay. But you know they're not really okay, they really want it, and you just have to keep pressing on them. You know, you really want that chocolate cake, don't you? And so he eventually accepts the gift. He invites Jacob to come on with him, but Jacob's like, no, let me settle. We'll come ahead. And so that's kind of how that chapter ends. It says, verse 18, Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, and there he settles in the land of Canaan. Shechem itself was located pretty near, if I can tell you this here, I think it's like 45 miles from Jerusalem. But let me tell you this, if I can find it exactly. 40 miles north of Jerusalem. So, again, that area is very important, biblically speaking. Not the best map to show Shechem. But you see the little body of water there near Bethel. Shechem is just north of Bethel. And so that's where he originally settles at. Now, we'll note later he's going to have to move, and we'll see why when we get to chapter 35. So, or 34, sorry. Very next chapter. One last thing, and kind of this relationship changing between him and God. Let's go to the end of the chapter, verse 20. There he erected an altar and called it Elohi Israel. You know what that means? God, the God of Israel. Right? You see him taking ownership of God. With the name change, he then is this relationship between him and God is deepening. And so he calls this altar the God of Israel, or to the God of Israel, if you will. All right. Any other questions about 33? Then we get to 34. We've seen some tragedies in Genesis, And here's a real tragedy on a couple different levels. Verse 34 reintroduces Dinah. Now, Dinah, who is she?
She's the only daughter.
The only daughter mentioned, and she is the daughter of Leah, right? Who are her brothers?
Reuben, Simeon,
Levi, and who?
Judah.
That's her four brothers. Just keep that in mind. That's important as you go forward. But those are her four brothers. The four oldest brothers are her four brothers. Verse 1. Now, Dinah, however you want to pronounce that, the daughter of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. That ought to, make us think, where is she at when this happens? We're not going to blame her for what happens to her, but we can also say it's not very smart, and you're headed down the wrong road. Why is she going to see the women of the land? What's the implication of that?
She want to be like them.
She want to be like them. Now, who are the people that she's going to see? Are they good people? No, they're not. So she went out to see the women of the land. Verse 2, when Shechem, now, I don't know his connection to the name of the area. I assume there's some connection there. I don't know what it is. But he has the same name as the area where they live. When Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, so you see is a man in power, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. So he rapes her, right? This is a very violent kind of act. He's forcing himself on her physically. Very brutal act. Something strange happens out of it, though. Along with it. So after doing what he did to her, he then humiliates her. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us what that means. I don't know how much worse you can get beyond the physical act that he's committed, but he did seems to be something beyond just that act. But it brings humiliation on her. I don't know if that meant he did it openly where people could know and hear about it. But then verse 3, and his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. This is one of the issues you see with men who are violent sometimes, is this turn in emotion from violence to trying to be sweet and kind. And so here's a man who was very violent. And you talk about toxic masculinity, here it is, right? This would be a moment of a man misusing his masculinity and doing something evil. And then trying to do what? To talk tenderly to her? After doing what he did and humiliating her and trying to talk tenderly, but that's what he tries to do. And then he goes to his father in verse 4, and what does he want? I want her, right? I want her to be my wife. And so his father, probably because he's never really held his son in check, and tries to do what his son wants him to do, right? He goes to Jacob. Verse 5, Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with the livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. So he tries to reach out to Jacob. How do you do that? There's like a leap here. It's hard for me. Your son has just did what he did to her. Then you're going to go to the father and you're going to ask him. I don't get it.
He is royalty, so he might be used to getting what he wants.
And that's probably what it is, right? Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely, right?
And he probably thinks it's a big honor.
Yeah, arrogance, right? Arrogance. And if you're Jacob on the other side, I mean, how difficult is this for you? But he doesn't act rashly. He waits for his sons to come home. Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it. And the men were indignant and very angry, justly, right? There's nothing they've done wrong to this point, right? They've not acted improperly to be angry. You should be indignant when sin's committed. And this kind of sin is awful. It's evil. And because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel. And it's interesting, he puts that qualifier on it, Moses does, in Israel, by lying with Jacob's wife. Why do that? Why does he say in Israel?
Because the upcoming kingdom of Israel will be established through Jacob.
Lead of God's people. Against God.
It goes to the law of Moses and the morality it upholds. The morality that the law of Moses upholds versus what the world's morality is are not the same. The morality of God's people versus those outside of God's people should be different. This kind of evil act is not endorsed within God's law, is it? No, this is an evil, awful thing. And so he says, this is something you don't have happen in Israel. Or you better not. You shouldn't. Right? Because it's evil and awful. And so he says, for such a thing must not be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. He's just giving the sons a key piece of information. What information did he just give to the sons that they might use for their own plans? What now? He wants her. And he wants her extremely badly. He says, please give her to him to be his wife. Verse 9, make marriages with us. Ooh, okay. That'll be another thing that jumps out at us. What's the problem with that? Now, as we get into the law of Moses, right, that's clearly not acceptable to God to intermarry with people outside of the people of Israel. And even now, go back. When Abraham's son Isaac was ready to marry, what did Abraham do? Yeah, he sent someone not into Canaan to find a wife. He sent his servant where? Back to Haran to find a wife. Why? Because he knew he didn't want his son to be married to the people of that land. Because he knew what they were doing. Then later, Isaac, his son Jacob, what happens with him? He sends a son back. And so even by this time with the children of Abraham, it's become a practice to not intermarry, to make marriages with the people of Canaan. Make marriages with us, verse 9. Give your daughters to us. Take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us in the land, and the land shall be open to you. So essentially, he's offering them citizenship. You're not just going to be a sojourner. You'll be people of Shechem, Shechemites. Trade in and get property in it. Shechem also said to his father and to her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you say to me, I will give. Okay, again, he's giving them something that they can use against him. As for me, as great a bride price as in gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife. He is just completely now infatuated with her. Verse 13, the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father deceitfully. You might want to note that there in the text, right? So, them being indignant and angry, you can be angry and not sin. This is where they begin to cross the line, right? They're practicing deceit. Because he had defiled their sister Dinah, they said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone." Okay, so, this is a really devious plan. I don't know how they came up with this. But they understood what circumcision meant. They had all been through it. They understood the consequences or the effects of it. Well, but the plan is for them to be circumcised. That's what I'm saying is they...
It's not to honor God.
Oh, no.
And the trick about the reproach, when they first talked about the reproach, they're not doing this because they defiled their sister. They took it personally. It was on them.
So let's get there. But you're right. So this is when they've crossed the line. They've begun to deceive. And so, thinking about this, they're seeking for what? Vengeance, not justice. Vengeance. There's a big difference between those two concepts. We should try to defend justice. We should seek justice. Justice based upon God's word. What they want is vengeance. What did Paul say about vengeance in Romans chapter 12? Allow God to avenge, not ourselves. And so they want retribution. And so they devise this plan that to have them circumcised. We won't read all this. I'll let you read some of it. But eventually what happens is the people agree to this. And so the people of the land are circumcised, the men of the land are circumcised. And then get down to verse 25. So they wait 3 days. Why do they wait 3 days? Again, they're familiar with the practice of circumcision. They know how it works. And now they've got every man circumcised, every man dealing with that pain. And so on the third day, verse 25, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, which two? Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers. Not all four of her brothers, but two of them, Simeon and Levi, they decide they're going to take vengeance in their own hands. They took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure. Notice that. While it, the city, felt secure and killed all the males. Think about the brutality of that. Now, I don't know how many men it was they killed, but they just too slaughtered a whole city of men. They just went through and killed them all. And it says they killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. So that's the first thing they do. So they slay the men, they slay the king and his son, they then take Dinah. Then it says the sons of Jacob came upon the slain, so they've already killed them. Now they come upon the slain and plundered their city because they had defiled their city. They took their flocks and their herds, their donkeys, and whatever was in the city and in the field, all their wealth, all their little ones, and their wives, all that was in the houses they captured and plundered. So, go ahead. No, it seems to be the indication they all came back. So the two killed the men, and then the rest of them came and they plundered.
Okay.
That would be my impression of what that's saying. Now, think about all they did. Why is this not justice for what Shechem did? Yes,
ma'am.
Well, and God doesn't command them to do it. They never have asked God's intervention in any of this. You notice that? They never one time go to God and say, "Hey, God, how should we handle this?" They took it in their own hands, and they committed murder out of a desire for retribution. Not justice. Now, they could have had a discussion. First, they should have asked God, what's justice? They could have had a discussion with Hamor about justice. They never did any of that. Now, what justice would have been? I don't know. I don't want to play God here. Would justice have been to kill Shechem? I don't know. But it surely doesn't seem to have been to kill every male in the city and then to plunder all of their wealth. That doesn't seem justified.
Well, the law of Moses also commands that, you know, if they defeat any other cities, they're not supposed to take any of their stuff. They're supposed to burn it all.
Absolutely. You remember the story of Jericho and what happened. I mean, not Jericho, but that's another one you can talk about. But I was thinking about... I was thinking about Saul. When Samuel says, "What do I hear in my ears?" Amaleks, yes. The Amalekites. And what they did there. It's a good point. So there's so many different ways this was handled improperly. But there, again, this isn't justice, what they did. This is not in any way to condone or to say what Shechem did wasn't purely evil. It was. But when we seek out vengeance for ourselves, retribution, we're doing it wrong. We should seek out God's justice, not our own. Any other comments about that? And I'll close this out.
I'm confused.
Yes, ma'am. That's all right.
So with this whole thing, these guys are killed for vengeance because their sister was defiled.
Yes.
And they didn't ask God if this was something that they should do, but yet at the same time, they're not really being condemned for it.
Well, they are, so we're going there. If you go to the end there, Jacob definitely condemns them for it. He says in verse 30, "You have brought trouble on me by making me a stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, the Perizzites. My numbers are few. If they gather themselves against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they're condemned, and what happens as a result of this? They have to leave Shechem. And they leave, and they go, I believe, to Bethel. Is where they end up traveling to. But they have to leave because of what's happened.
Those two sons get like put out of the will.
Yeah. I'm out of time, but that's definitely where I wanted to go. If you go later, to go to Genesis 49, when Jacob is giving his blessings, when Israel's laying out the blessings for the children, who loses their birthright? Well, we'll find out about Reuben later. Reuben does something. But not only does he lose his birthright, but so does Simeon and Levi. And it ultimately falls, the first order birthright falls to who? Judah. Mm-hmm. He's the third. Or fourth. I'm sorry. Fourth.
These are the same, well, not men. These are the same men who were just a few years ago going to sell their brother.
Yes.
And lie to their father in this Zacchaeus way of him being killed. So.
Yeah. So the trouble for the brothers is not over by any means. Great comments and discussion today. I mean, a lot going on here. But as we mentioned, just note that in 49 about them losing their birthright. Well, again, we'll come back to Reuben later. Reuben has some trouble. In the next chapter, if you want to go ahead and read chapter 35 through 37, we'll discuss that in 2 weeks. God will bless Israel as he's blessed Abraham, as he's blessed Isaac. He'll also bless Israel again, and renames Jacob to Israel in chapter 35. And then in 37, we're introduced to a pretty important patriarch. We'll reintroduce to him. We get a bigger picture of his life, which is Joseph. And we'll begin that discussion in 2 weeks. Again, thank you all for being here as we close out this discussion.